1381. The souls and spirits who have not as yet been allotted a constant position in the grand man are carried to various places, now to this, now to that. Now are seen on one side, now on another, now above, now below. These are called wandering souls or spirits, and are comparable to the fluids in the human body, which rise up from the stomach, sometimes to the head, sometimes to other parts, and are carried about. So it is with these spirits, until they come to their appointed place, and to a position in conformity with their general state. It is their states that are thus changed and wander. 1382. Men cannot but confound the divine infinity with infinity of space, and as they have no apprehension of infinity of space except as of a nothing, which in fact it is, they do not believe in the divine infinity. Such also is the case with eternity, which men cannot conceive of except as an eternity of time, since it is presented by means of time to those who are in time. The true idea of the divine infinity is insinuated into the angels by the fact that they are instantly present under the Lord's sight, with no intervening space or time, even though they were at the furthest extremity of the universe. And the true idea of the divine eternity is insinuated by the fact that thousands of years do not appear to them as time, but scarcely otherwise than as if they had lived only a minute. And both ideas are insinuated by the fact that in their present they have past and future things together. Hence they have no solicitude about future things, nor have they ever any idea of death, but only the idea of life, so that in all their present there is the Lord's eternity and infinity. Chapter the 12th. Concerning the perception of spirits and of angels, and concerning spheres in the other life. 1383. Among the wonderful things in the other life are perceptions, of which there are two kinds. One kind, which is angelic perception, consists in perceiving what is true and good, and what is from the Lord, and what from self, and also in perceiving the source and quality of their thoughts, words, and actions, when these are from themselves. The other kind is common to all, to angels in the highest perfection, and to spirits according to their respective qualities, and consists in knowing the quality of another on his first approach. 1384. As regards the first kind of perception, which is angelic, and which consists in perceiving what is true and good, also what is from the Lord, and what from self, and also in perceiving the source and quality of their thoughts, words, and actions, when these are from themselves, it has been granted me to converse with the sons of the most ancient church concerning their perception. They said that of themselves they neither think nor can think anything, nor of themselves will anything, but that in all things whatever that they think and will, both in general and in particular, they perceive what comes from the Lord and what from other sources. And they perceive not only how much is from the Lord and how much is as from themselves, but also when it is as from themselves, they perceive whence it is, from what angels, and likewise the quality of the angels and what their thoughts are, distinguishing every difference. Thus they perceive what the influx is, and numberless other things. Perceptions of this kind exist in much variety. With the celestial angels, who are in love to the Lord, there is perception of good, and from this of all things of truth. And as they perceive truth from good, they do not admit of any speaking, and still less of any reasoning about truth. But they say that it is so, or that it is not so. Whereas the spiritual angels, who likewise have perception, although not such as the celestial have, speak concerning truth and good, but still they perceive them, although with a difference. For there are innumerable varieties of this perception, the varieties having reference to their perception as to whether a thing is of the Lord's will, as to whether it is of his favor, or as to whether it is of his permission, all of which are perfectly distinct from one another. 1385. There are spirits who belong to the province of the skin, especially the scaly skin, who desire to reason about everything. They have no perception of what is good and true. Indeed, the more they reason, the less they perceive. They make wisdom consist in reasoning, and on this base their claim to seem wise. They have been told that it is of angelic wisdom to perceive without reasoning whether a thing is good and true, but they do not apprehend that such perception is possible. These are they who in the life of the body had confused truth and good by means of scientific and philosophical discussions, and thereby had seemed to themselves more learned than others. Yet they had not first taken hold of any principles of truth from the Word. From this cause they have less common sense than others. 1386. So long as spirits suppose that they are under their own guidance and think from themselves, and that they have knowledge, understanding, and wisdom from themselves, they cannot have perception, but believe it to be an idle tale. 1387. I have several times spoken about perception with those in the other life, who, while they lived in the world, supposed themselves able to penetrate and understand all things, telling them that angels perceive that they think and speak and will and act from the Lord. But still they could not conceive what perception is, but supposed that if all things were to inflow in this way, they would be bereaved of all life, because in that case they would think nothing from themselves or from what is their own, and in this they had made life to consist, and that in that case it would be another who was thinking, and not themselves, so that they would be mere organs devoid of life. But they were told that between having perception and not having it, the difference of life is like that between light and darkness, and that men first begin to feel alive when they receive such perception, for they then live from the Lord, and also have what is their own, which is given together with all happiness and delight. It was also shown them by varied experience how the case is with perception, and at the time they acknowledged the possibility of it. But after a while they again did not know, doubted and denied. From this it has been made evident how difficult it is for man to comprehend what perception is. 1388. The second kind of perception, as has been said, is what is common to all, in the highest perfection to angels, and to spirits according to their quality. It consists in knowing the quality of another at his first approach, even if he does not speak. He manifests himself forthwith by a certain wonderful influx. A good spirit is known not only as to the quality of his goodness, but also of his faith, and when he speaks, from every single word he utters. And an evil spirit is known as to the quality of his wickedness and unbelief, and when he speaks, by every single word he utters, and so manifestly that there can be no mistake. Something similar appears with men, who likewise can sometimes know from another's gesture, looks, or speech what he is thinking, even although it is contrary to what he says. And this knowledge is natural to man, deriving its origin and character from the nature of spirits, and thus from the spirit of the man himself, and its communication with the world of spirits. This communicative perception has its beginning in the fact that the Lord wills that all goods should be communicable, and that all may be affected by mutual love, and so be happy. Hence, such perception reigns universally also among spirits. 1389. Souls that have come into the other life have wondered that there is such a communication of another's thoughts, and that they at once know the quality of another person's faith, as well as that of his disposition. But they were told that the spirit receives much more excellent faculties when it has been separated from the body. During the bodily life, there is an influx of the objects of the senses, and also of fantasies from those things which inhere therefrom in the memory, besides anxieties for the future, various passions that are excited by external things, cares for food, clothing, place of abode, children, and other things, concerning which they take no thought in the other life, and therefore on the removal of these obstacles and hindrances, together with the corporeal parts that are of gross sensation, they cannot but be in a more perfect state. The same faculties remain, but are much more perfect, clear, and free, especially with those who have lived in charity and faith in the Lord, and in innocence. For the faculties of all such are immensely elevated above those which they had in the body, even at length to the angelic faculties of the third heaven. 1390. Nor is there a communication merely of another's affections and thoughts, but also of his science, to such an extent that one spirit supposes that he has known what another knows, even if he has known nothing about such matters. Thus there is a communication of all the other's science. Some spirits retain what is thus communicated, and some do not. 1391. Communications are made both by conversation with one another and by ideas together with representations. For the ideas of thought of spirits are simultaneously representative, and by this means all things are set forth in great fullness. They can represent more by a single idea than they can utter by a thousand words. But the angels perceive what is within the idea, what the affection is, what the origin of the affection, what its end, besides other things that are interior. 1392. The delights and happiness in the other life are wont to be communicated from one to many by a real transmission that is wonderful, by which they too are affected in a similar manner. And these communications are effected without any loss to him who makes the communication. It has been granted me also thus to communicate delights to others by transmissions. From this may be seen what must be the happiness of those who love the neighbor more than themselves, and who desire nothing more than to transfer their happiness to others, a condition that originates in the Lord, who in this manner communicates felicities to the angels. The communications of happiness are such continual transmissions, but without any reflection that they are from such an active origin, and from a determination, as it were, open and voluntary. 1393. Communications are also affected in a wonderful way by means of removals, the nature of which cannot be perceived by man. Sad and troublesome things are removed in an instant, and thus pleasant and delightful things are presented without any hindrances. For when these have been removed, the angels flow in and communicate their delights. 1394. Since the perception is such that one can know in an instant what is the quality of another in respect to love and faith, it follows that spirits and angels are joined together into societies in accordance with their agreement, and are separated from fellowship according to their disagreement, and this so exquisitely that there is not the smallest difference which does not dissociate or consociate. Hence the societies in the heavens are so distinct from one another that nothing can be conceived to be more so. And this in accordance with all the differences of love to the Lord and of faith in him, which cannot be numbered. Hence comes the form of heaven, which is such as to represent one man, and this form is continually being perfected. 1395. As regards this kind of perception, I have learned many things from experience, but it would be tedious to relate them all. Often have I heard the deceitful speaking, and have perceived not only that there was deceit, but also what the deceit was, and what special wickedness there was in it. There is, as it were, an image of the deceit in every tone of the voice. I could also perceive whether the deceit belonged to him who was speaking or to others who spoke through him. The case is similar with those who are in hatred. The nature of the hatred is at once perceived, and more things that are in it than man can in any wise be induced to believe. When the persons against whom they have cherished hatred are presented to view, a lamentable state results. For whatever they had thought and plotted against the other stands forth to view. 1396. A certain spirit who, while he lived in the world, had desired to arrogate to himself merit for his acts and his teaching, went away to the right and came to those who are not of such a character. In order that he might be associated with them, he said that he was nothing and that he desired to serve them. But instantly on his first approach, and indeed while he was still far away, they perceived what he was, and they at once replied that he was not what he professed to be, but that he desired to be great, and therefore could not be in agreement with them who were little. Being ashamed at this, he withdrew, wondering that they knew him so far away. 1397. As the perceptions are so exquisite, evil spirits cannot approach a sphere or any society where there are good spirits who are in mutual love. When they merely approach it, they begin to be distressed, and they complain and lament. In his audacity and self-confidence, a spirit who was evil obtruded himself into a certain society that is at the first threshold of heaven. But from the moment of his arrival, he was scarcely able to breathe, and became sensible of a cadaverous stench from himself, and therefore fell back. 1398. There was a number of spirits about me who were not good. An angel came, and I saw that the spirits could not endure his presence, for as he came near, they fell back more and more. I wondered at this, but it was given me to know that the spirits could not stay in the sphere which he had with him. From this, and also from other experience, it has been made evident that one angel can put to flight myriads of evil spirits, for they cannot endure this fear of mutual love. And yet it was perceived that this fear of the angel had been tempered by means of others who were associated with him. If it had not been tempered, they would all have been dissipated. From all this it is evident what the quality of perception is in the other life, and how those who are there are associated together and also separated from fellowship in accordance with the perceptions. 1399. Every spirit has communication with the interior and with the inmost heaven, though he is wholly ignorant of it, and without this communication he could not live. What he is inwardly is known by the angels who are in his interiors, and he is also ruled by the Lord by means of these angels. Thus there are communications of his interiors in heaven, as there are of his exteriors in the world of spirits. By the interior communications he is disposed for the use to which he is led, without being aware of it. The case is the same with man. He likewise communicates with heaven by means of angels, although of this he is wholly ignorant, for otherwise he could not live. The things which flow in therefrom into his thoughts are only the ultimate effects. All his life is from this source, and from this all the endeavors of his life are ruled. 1400. A continuation concerning perceptions and the spheres that arise from them will be found at the end of this chapter. 12:1. And Yehovah said unto Abram, Get thee out of thy land, and from thy birth, and from thy father's house, to the land that I will cause thee to see. 2. And I will make thee into a great nation, and I will bless thee, and will make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. 3. And I will bless them that bless thee, and will curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all the families of the ground be blessed. 4. And Abram went as Yehovah had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was the son of 5 years and 70 years when he went forth out of Haran. 5. And Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gotten, and the soul that they had gained in Haran. And they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. 6. And Abram passed through the land, even unto the place Shechem, even unto the oak grove Moreh, and the Canaanite was then in the land. 7. And Yehovah appeared to Abram, and said, To thy seed will I give this land. And there he built an altar to Yehovah, who was seen of him. 8. And he removed from thence into the mountain on the east of Bethel, and spread his tent, having Bethel toward the sea, and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to Yehovah, and called on the name of Yehovah. 9. And Abram journeyed, going and journeying toward the south. 10. And there was a famine in the land. And Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, because the famine was grievous in the land. 11. And it came to pass that when he drew nigh to come into Egypt, he said unto Sarai his wife, Behold, I pray, I know that thou art a woman beautiful to look upon. 12. And it shall come to pass when the Egyptians shall see thee, that they will say, This is his wife, and they will kill me and will make thee to live. 13. Say, I pray, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and that my soul may live because of thee. 14. And it came to pass when Abram was come into Egypt, that the Egyptians saw the woman, that she was very beautiful. 15. And the princes of Pharaoh saw her, and praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. 16. And he did well unto Abram for her sake, and he had flock and herd, and he asses and men servants, and maid servants and she asses and camels. 17. And Yehovah smote Pharaoh with great plagues and his house, because of the word of Sarai, Abram's wife. 18. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, What is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she is thy wife? 19. Why saidest thou, She is my sister, and I might have taken her to me for a woman? And now behold thy wife, take her and go. 20. And Pharaoh commanded the men concerning him, and they sent him away, and his wife, and all that he had. The contents. Number 1401. True historical things begin here, all of which are representative and each word significative. The things related in this chapter concerning Abram represent the Lord's state from earliest childhood up to youth. As the Lord was born in the same way as other men, he also advanced from an obscure state to one more lucid. Haran is the first state, which was obscure. Shechem is the second. The oak grove Moreh is the third. The mountain which had Bethel toward the sea and Ai on the east is the fourth. And the journey thence toward the south into Egypt is the fifth. 1402. The things told of Abram's sojourn in Egypt represent and signify the Lord's first instruction. Abram is the Lord. Sarai, as a wife, is truth to be adjoined to the celestial. Sarai, as a sister, is intellectual truth. Egypt is science. The progress from matters of science, even to celestial truths, is described. This was according to divine order, that the Lord's human essence might be conjoined with his divine essence, and at the same time become Yahuwah. The Internal Sense, 1403. From the first chapter of Genesis up to this point, or rather to the mention of Eber, the histories have not been true but made-up histories, which in the internal sense signify celestial and spiritual things. But in this and the following chapters, the histories are not made-up but true histories, and in the internal sense these in like manner signify celestial and spiritual things, as anyone may see from the single consideration that it is the word of the Lord. 1404. In these things now before us, which are true histories, all the statements and words, both in general and in particular, have in the internal sense an entirely different signification from that which they bear in the sense of the letter. But the histories themselves are representative. Abram, who is first treated of, represents in general the Lord, and specifically the celestial man. Isaac, who is afterwards treated of, in like manner represents in general the Lord, and specifically the spiritual man. Jacob also in general represents the Lord, and specifically the natural man. Thus they represent the things which are of the Lord, of his kingdom, and of the church. 1405. But the internal sense, as has already been clearly shown, is of such a nature that all things in general and in particular are to be understood abstractedly from the letter, just as if the letter did not exist. For in the internal sense is the word's soul and life, which does not become manifest unless the sense of the letter, as it were, vanishes. Thus do the angels from the Lord perceive the word when it is being read by man. 1406. What the historical facts in this chapter represent is evident from the contents that have been premised. What is signified by the statements and the words may be seen from what follows, where they are explained. 1407, verse 1. And Yehovah said unto Abram, Get thee out of thy land, and from thy birth, and from thy father's house, to the land that I will cause thee to see. These and the things which follow occurred historically, as they are written. But the historical facts are representative, and each word is significative. By Abram in the internal sense is meant the Lord, as has been said before. By Yehovah said unto Abram is signified the first animate version of all. Get thee out of thy land signifies the corporeal and worldly things from which he was to recede, and from thy birth signifies the more exterior corporeal and worldly things. And from thy father's house signifies the more interior of such things. To the land that I will cause thee to see signifies the spiritual and celestial things that were to be presented to view. 1408. These and the things which follow occurred historically as they are written. But the historical facts are representative, and all the words are significative. The case is the same with all the historical portions of the word, not only with those in the books of Moses, but also with those in the books of Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings. In all these, nothing is apparent but mere history. But although it is history in the sense of the letter, still in the internal sense there are arcana of heaven, which lie stored up and hidden there, and which can never be seen so long as the mind, together with the eye, is kept on the historical facts, nor are they revealed until the mind is removed from the sense of the letter. The word of the Lord is like a body that contains within it a living soul. The things belonging to the soul do not appear while the mind is so fixed on corporeal things that it scarcely believes that there is a soul, still less that it will live after death. But as soon as the mind withdraws from corporeal things, those that are of the soul and life become manifest. And this also is the reason, not only why corporeal things must die before man can be born anew or be regenerated, but also why the body itself must die, so that he may come into heaven and see celestial things. Such also is the case with the word of the Lord. Its corporeal things are those that belong to the sense of the letter, and when the mind is kept in these, the internal things are not seen at all. But when the former are as it were dead, then for the first time are the latter presented to view. But still the things of the sense of the letter are similar to those which are with man while in the body, to wit, to the scientifics of the memory that come from the things of sense, and which are general vessels that contain interior or internal things within them. It may be known from this that the vessels are one thing, and the essentials contained in the vessels another. The vessels are natural. The essentials contained in the vessels are spiritual and celestial. So likewise the historical portions of the word, and all the expressions in the word, are general, natural, and indeed material vessels, in which are things spiritual and celestial. And these in no wise come into view except by the internal sense. This will be evident to everyone from the mere fact that many things in the word are said according to appearances, and indeed according to the fallacies of the senses, as that the Lord is angry, that he punishes, curses, kills, and many other such things, when yet in the internal sense they mean quite the contrary, namely that the Lord is in no wise angry and punishes, still less does he curse and kill. And yet to those who from simplicity of heart believe the word as they apprehend it in the letter, no harm is done while they live in charity. The reason is that the word teaches nothing else than that every one should live in charity with his neighbor, and love the Lord above all things. Those who do this have in themselves the internal things, and therefore with them the fallacies taken from the sense of the letter are easily dispelled. That the historical facts are representative, but all the words significative, is evident from what has already been said and shown concerning representatives and significatives. Number 665-920-1361. Nevertheless, since representatives begin here, it is well to give briefly a further explanation of the subject. The most ancient church, which was celestial, looked upon all earthly and worldly, and also bodily things, which were in any wise objects of the senses, as being dead things. But as each and all things in the world present some idea of the Lord's kingdom, consequently of things celestial and spiritual, when they saw them or apprehended them by any sense, they thought not of them, but of the celestial and spiritual things. Indeed, they thought not from the worldly things, but by means of them. And thus with them things that were dead became living. The things thus signified were collected from their lips by their posterity, and were formed by them into doctrinals, which were the word of the ancient church after the flood. With the ancient church these were significative, for through them they learned internal things, and from them they thought of spiritual and celestial things. But when this knowledge began to perish, so that they did not know that such things were signified, and began to regard the terrestrial and worldly things as holy, and to worship them, with no thought of their signification, the same things were then made representative. Thus arose the representative church, which had its beginning in Abram, and was afterwards instituted with the posterity of Jacob. From this it may be known that representatives had their rise from the significatives of the ancient church, and these from the celestial ideas of the most ancient church. The nature of representatives may be manifest from the historical facts of the word, in which all the acts of the fathers, Abram, Isaac, and Jacob, and afterwards those of Moses, and of the judges and kings of Judah and Israel, were nothing but representatives. Abram in the word, as has been said, represents the Lord. And because he represents the Lord, he represents also the celestial man. Isaac likewise represents the Lord, and thence the spiritual man. Jacob in like manner represents the Lord, and thence the natural man corresponding to the spiritual. But with representatives, the character of the person is not considered at all, but the thing which he represents. For all the kings of Judah and of Israel, of whatever character, represented the Lord's kingly function. And all the priests, of whatever character, represented his priestly function. Thus the evil as well as the good could represent the Lord and the celestial and spiritual things of his kingdom. For, as has been said and shown above, the representatives were altogether separated from the person. Hence then it is that all the historical facts of the word are representative. And because they are representative, it follows that all the words of the word are significative. That is, that they have a different signification in the internal sense from that which they bear in the sense of the letter. Yehovah said unto Abram, that this signifies the first animate version of all depends upon the fact that this historical statement is representative and the words themselves significative. Such was the style in the ancient church that when anything was true, they said Yehovah said or Yehovah spake, which signified that it was so, as has been shown above. But after significatives had been turned into representatives, then Yehovah or the Lord did actually speak with men. And when it is then said that Yehovah said or Yehovah spake with anyone, it signifies the same as before. For the Lord's words in the true historical parts involve the same as his words in the made-up ones. There is only this difference, that the latter are so composed as to be like true history, and the former are not so composed. Wherefore that Yehovah said unto Abram signifies nothing else than the first animate version, as when in the ancient church anyone was admonished by conscience or by some other dictate or by their word that a thing was so. It was then said in like manner that Yehovah said. 1411. Get thee out of thy land. That this signifies the corporeal and worldly things from which he was to recede is evident from the signification of land, which is variable, adapting itself to the person or thing of which it is predicated. As in the first chapter of Genesis, where likewise land signifies the external man. See also number 82, 620, 636, 913. That it here signifies corporeal and worldly things is because these belong to the external man. A land in the proper sense is the land, region, or kingdom itself. It also denotes the inhabitant thereof, and also the people itself and the nation itself in the land. Thus the word land not only signifies in a broad sense the people or the nation, but also in a limited sense the inhabitant. When the word land is used with reference to the inhabitant, its signification is then in accordance with the thing concerning which it is used. It is here used respecting corporeal and worldly things, for the land of his birth, out of which Abram was to go, was idolatrous. In the historical sense, therefore, the meaning here is that Abram should go out from that land, but in the representative sense, that he should recede from the things belonging to the external man. That is, that external things should not resist nor bring in disturbance. And because this is concerning the Lord, it signifies that external things should agree with internal things. 1412. And from thy birth. that this signifies the more exterior, corporeal, and worldly things, and that from thy father's house signifies the more interior of such things, may be seen from the signification of birth and from the signification of a father's house. There are in man corporeal and worldly things more exterior and more interior. The more exterior are those which are proper to the body, such as pleasures and the things of sense. The more internal are affections and scientifics, and these are what are signified by birth and a father's house. That these are their significations may be confirmed by many passages of the word, but as it is evident from the connection and from looking at the things in the internal sense, there is no need to dwell on the confirmation. 1413. To the land that I will cause thee to see. That this signifies the spiritual and celestial things that will be presented to view is evident from the signification of land. Numbers 662-1066, and here indeed of the land of Canaan, by which the Lord's kingdom is represented, as may be seen from many other passages in the Word. The land of Canaan is therefore called the Holy Land, and also the Celestial Canaan. And because it represented the Lord's kingdom, it also represented and signified the celestial and spiritual things that belong to his kingdom. Here, those which belong to the Lord himself. 1414. As the Lord is here treated of, more arcana are contained than can ever be thought of and declared. For here in the internal sense is meant the Lord's first state, when he was born, which state, because most deeply hidden, cannot well be set forth so as to be understood. Suffice it to say that the Lord was as another man, except that he was conceived of Yahuwah, but still was born of a virgin mother, and by birth derived from the virgin mother infirmities like those of man in general. These infirmities are corporeal, and it is said of them in this verse that he should recede from them, in order that celestial and spiritual things might be presented to his view. There are two hereditary natures connate in man, one from the father, the other from the mother. The Lord's hereditary from the father was the divine, but his hereditary from the mother was an infirm human one. This infirm nature which a man derives hereditarily from his mother is something corporeal that is dispersed when he is being regenerated, while that which a man derives from his father remains to eternity. But the Lord's hereditary nature from Yahuwah, as was said, was divine. Another arcanum is that the Lord's human also was made divine. In him alone there was a correspondence of all the things of the body with the divine, a most perfect correspondence, infinitely perfect, giving rise to a union of the corporeal things with divine celestial things, and of sensuous things with divine spiritual things. And thus he is the perfect man, and the only man. 1415, verse 2. And I will make thee into a great nation, and I will bless thee, and will make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. I will make thee into a great nation, signifies the kingdom in the heavens and on earth. It is said, a great nation, from things celestial and good. And I will bless thee, signifies the fructification of celestial things and the multiplication of spiritual things. And will make thy name great, signifies glory. And thou shalt be a blessing, signifies that all things both in general and in particular are from the Lord. 1:4:1:6 I will make thee into a great nation. That this signifies the kingdom in the heavens and on earth is evident from the signification of a nation as being, in the internal sense, the celestial of love and the good therefrom. Thus all in the universe, in whom is the celestial of love and of charity. And as in the internal sense the Lord is here treated of, there is meant all the celestial and all the good therefrom. Thus his kingdom, which is with those who are in love and charity. In the supreme sense, the Lord is himself the great nation, because he is the celestial itself and good itself. For all the good of love and of charity is from him alone. And therefore the Lord is his kingdom itself. That is, he is the all in all of his kingdom, as is also acknowledged by all the angels in heaven. Hence now it is evident that I will make thee into a great nation signifies the Lord's kingdom in the heavens and on earth. That in the internal sense, where the Lord and the celestial things of love are treated of, a nation signifies the Lord and all celestial things, is evident from the things adduced above concerning the signification of a nation and of nations. 1:2:5:8, 1:2:5:9 This may also be further confirmed by the following passages. Concerning Abraham, it is said, Thy name shall not any more be called Abram, and thy name shall be Abraham, for the father of a multitude of nations have I given thee. Genesis 17:5 The letter H in Abraham was taken from the name Yahweh, on account of his representation of Yahweh, or the Lord. In like manner it is said of Sarai, Thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. And I will bless her, and also give thee a son of her. Thus I will bless her, and she shall become nations. Kings of peoples shall be from her. Genesis 17:15-16 Here nations denote the celestial things of love, and kings of peoples, the spiritual things of faith thence derived, which belong to the Lord alone. Concerning Jacob, in like manner, Thy name shall no more be called Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And God said, I am God the thunderer, increase and multiply. A nation and a congregation of nations shall be from thee, and kings shall go forth out of thy loins. Genesis 25:10-11 Here Israel denotes the Lord, and that he himself is Israel in the highest sense is well known to some. And when he is Israel, it is evident that a nation and an assemblage of nations and kings out of his loins are the celestial and the spiritual things of love. And therefore all who are in the celestial and spiritual things of love. Concerning Ishmael, Abram's son by Hagar, it is said, The son of the handmaid, I will make him into a nation, because he is thy seed. Genesis 21:13-18 What is represented by Ishmael will be seen in its place. The seed of Abram is love itself, and from this the term nation is used for those begotten of Ishmael. That a nation signifies the celestial things of love is evident in Moses. If hearing, ye will hear my voice and will keep my covenant. Ye shall also be a peculiar treasure unto me out of all peoples. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Exodus 19, verses 5 and 6. Hear a kingdom of priests, which is the Lord's kingdom in the heavens and on earth, being so named from the celestial things of love, is manifestly called a holy nation. Whereas the Lord's kingdom from his kingly function was named from the spiritual things of love and is called a holy people. And for this reason, kings out of the loins, in the passage quoted above, are spiritual things. In Jeremiah, if these statutes have departed from before me, saith Yahuwah, the seed of Israel also shall cease, that it be not a nation before me all the days. 31, verse 36. The seed of Israel denotes the celestial of charity, and when this ceases, there is no longer a nation before the Lord. In Isaiah, the people that walk in darkness have seen a great light. Thou hast multiplied the nation. 9, verses 2 and 3. This is said of the Church of the Nations specifically, but in general of all who are in ignorance and live in charity. These are a nation because they are of the Lord's kingdom. In David, that I may see the good of thy chosen, that I may be glad in the gladness of thy nation, that I may glory in thine inheritance. Psalm 106, verse 5. Here nation plainly denotes the Lord's kingdom, as the signification of nation is the celestial of love and the good therefrom. There originated from a perception of this signification the fact that the men of the most ancient church were distinguished into households, families, and nations, and thereby they perceived the Lord's kingdom and consequently the celestial itself. From this perceptive arose the significative, and from this the representative. 1417. That a great nation is so called from celestial things and goods is evident from what has just been said and shown, and also from what was said above. Number 1259. Hence it may be known what, in the proper sense, is the Church of the Nations. 1418. And I will bless thee. That this signifies the fructification of celestial things and the multiplication of spiritual things is evident from the signification in the word of to bless, concerning which we will treat presently. 1419. And I will make thy name great. That this signifies glory is evident without explanation. In the external sense, by making a name and by glory, there is signified something worldly, but in the internal sense, something celestial. This celestial is not to strive to be the greatest, but to be the least, by serving all, as the Lord himself said in Matthew. It shall not be so among you, but whosoever would be great among you shall be your minister, and whosoever would be first among you shall be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his soul a redemption for many. 20, verses 26 to 28. Mark 10, verses 44 and 45. It is the celestial of love not to desire to be one's own, but to belong to all, so that we desire to give others all that is our own. In this consists the essence of celestial love. The Lord, being love itself, or the essence and life of the love of all in the heavens, wills to give to the human race all things that are his, which is signified by his saying that the Son of Man came to give his soul a redemption for many. From this it is evident that in the internal sense, name and glory are altogether different from what they are in the external sense. In heaven, therefore, all are rejected who desire to become great and the greatest, because this is contrary to the essence and life of celestial love, which are from the Lord. Hence also it is that nothing is more contrary to celestial love than the love of self. Concerning these things, see what is related from experience above. Number 450, 452, 952. One 420. And thou shalt be a blessing. That this signifies that all things both in general and in particular are from the Lord is evident from the signification of a blessing. A blessing is predicated of all goods, in the external sense of corporeal, worldly, and natural goods, in the internal sense of spiritual and celestial goods. To be a blessing is to be the source of all goods and the giver of all goods. This can by no means be said of Abram, and hence it is evident that by Abram is represented the Lord, who alone is a blessing. In like manner, in regard to what is said of Abraham hereafter, Abraham shall surely become a great and numerous nation, and in him shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Genesis 18, verse 18. Of Isaac, in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed. Genesis 26, verse 4. And of Jacob, in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Genesis 28, verse 14. That nations cannot be blessed and are not blessed in Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and in their seed, but in the Lord, may be seen by everyone. This is clearly said in David. His name shall endure forever. Before the sun shall the name of his son endure, and all nations shall be blessed in him. Psalm 72, verse 17, where the Lord is treated of. Again, thou shalt set him for blessings forever. Psalm 21, verse 6. Where also the Lord is treated of. In Jeremiah, the nations shall be blessed in him, and in him shall they glory. 4, verse 2. From these passages it is now evident that a blessing signifies the Lord, and that when he is called a blessing, it signifies that from him are all celestial and spiritual things, which alone are goods. And because they alone are goods, they alone are truths. And therefore, in proportion as there are celestial and spiritual goods in natural, worldly, and corporeal ones, in the same proportion, these are goods and are blessed.